Mr. Goldman is here. We have the four jurisdictions represented. This is an unusual meeting in that we have both the both the Accessibility Advisory Committee and the Riders Advisory Committee here for a joint meeting, because there are lots of issues that affect both, and we're happy to see you both. I have a little bit of business to go through first, but to save time, and I know Mr. Evans has to leave, we'll accelerate that business. Can I have approval of the agenda? Okay. All in favor? Aye. We have a number of executive sessions of the executive committee we need to certify to. These are essentially the meetings where the executive committee has been interviewing candidates for the CEO job, so you know we've been doing our job there. And we have minutes of these various sessions. Can I have a motion en bloc to approve items 3A through E and 4A through E?
So moved.
Yeah, if there are any questions on these, yes.
My question, I'm just trying to recollect some of these events. I don't recall the August one. What happened?
I think that,
I
don't. Do you have that?
I do.
John has it. I was going to waive the reading of the certification. Okay. What that meeting was. Yeah. It was not recruitment, right. Okay. Is there any objection to approving 3A through E and 4A through E? Hearing none, they're approved. And we'll move to the information items. If we don't let these back up so much, we'll be able to give them more attention in the future. But, yeah.
You recorded it. I did not participate in the vote as to the October 12th, because I think that was when I was still away.
You were away, yes. Yeah, and that was a regular meeting in executive session, not a a personnel meeting. Right.
Well, can I ask you just something?
Yes.
This is my first time ever in this kind of thing. What is it?
This is an agreement that was made several years ago that on a regular basis, the Riders Advisory Council and the Accessibility Council would meet directly with the board through the executive committee to talk about issues and future agendas. And we try to do it at least every 3 months with each of them.
Okay.
And we do it on a board meeting day after the board meeting.
Okay.
And there have been occasions recently where the board meeting has run so long that we actually had to not do it. But I think it's a useful exercise for all of us to be face-to-face with our advisors. That's why we hire them. That's why we pay you the big bucks.
Yeah, there you go.
Do they do it for me?
No, they're riders.
Riders.
Yeah, they're not. We don't pay them. I'm just kidding. You don't pay me either.
You could
so
start.
Right. We're even.
We'd entertain a motion that you start.
Yeah.
That better would be veto.
Yeah. So, we'll go around because we do have new faces at the table. Yeah. Elmer?
Good afternoon, everyone. I do appreciate the opportunity to be here. I am Elver Arisa Silva, and I am the second vice chair of the AAC. Thank you.
And jurisdiction you're from?
Washington, D.C.
D.C., yeah.
My name is Pat Sheehan. I've been here forever, I think, from Montgomery County, and I chair the AAC.
Ms. Rush?
My name is Denise Rush, and I live in Suitland, Maryland. I am the first vice chair for the AAC. I am the vice chair for the Metro Access Subcommittee, and I am vice president for the National Federation for the Blind of Maryland, Slagle Creek.
Thank you. Christian, we know from our Metro staff.
Good afternoon. My name is Dan Turk. I'm from D.C. I'm vice chair from D.C. for the RAC.
Barbara
Hermanson. I represent Alexandria, and I am the RAC chair this year.
Yeah, good afternoon. My name is Jeremiah Bush. I'm representing Fairfax County on the RAC, the chairman of the Budget and Finance Committee for the Riders Advisory Council.
Yeah, I'm Bob Fogel from Montgomery County. I'm the Maryland Vice Chair of the RAC and also Chair of the Customer Service Committee.
Thank you, and you know who all of us are, as do most riders.
I'm not sure that everyone in the AC has met you, so can you remind me of yourself?
Yeah.
Kathy Hutchins from Fairfax County.
And Moore County, federal member and chair of the Metro Board.
And my name is Jack Evans, and I represent the District of Columbia.
And I'm Michael Golden, I represent the State Maryland.
Okay. Several items from each of the groups, and some of them overlap. So we'll start with those that are on the AAC agenda.
Okay. I guess let me see if I can run through, and Denise and Elver will be chiming in as they want to. I think I first want to start with the ones that overlap, jumping on the agenda down to the priority seating. A joint project that was worked together between the RAC and AAC, and it was brought to us by the disabled veteran who was having problems with priority seating, particularly on buses. The after meeting with our group and then also with the RAC, what we're looking at implementing or recommending for implementation are a series of mostly education and signage updates, particularly on buses. We think that putting notes, putting announcements on the buses that indicate that priority seating is along the front first set of seats on the buses that flip up is going to be important. People who have been sitting in those seats don't seem to understand that those seats are priority seats for people with disabilities. So I think reminders to individuals, the same way as you would give reminders to them to cross behind the back of the bus, those reminders we think should help. We think that additional signage and perhaps the wheelchair logos on the seats would also be helpful. I think that looking and interviewing individuals with respect to do they know that these are priority seats initially before a campaign is started, an education campaign is started, is going to be important. Then putting the announcements out there and then testing to see if there's any change in the behavior at the end. Those are all important. I was told by individuals on my committee that these circulator in D.C. Has a very good priority seating campaign going on, and individuals who have ridden that find it very effective. Dan, you and I worked on this. Do you have any other thoughts as far as the priority seating recommendations going forward?
Sure. Thanks, Pat. Yeah, it was a pleasure to work with you guys on this, and we from the RAC believe that what they're asking for is very reasonable relative to everyone's trip experience. When someone comes onto a bus and uses a priority seating, it obviously affects other passengers, maybe in a smaller way. So we think what they're asking for is fair. Focusing on education, especially giving people a better idea of the experience that a disabled rider has had to get to the point where he's going onto the bus and inconveniencing other people is very important, because the people that ride the Metro as opposed to Metro Access, they're really making a dedication, and the more that riders can be informed of that so that they can do the right thing, which I think everybody would like to do that, and help people that need help is great. And I would just want to add that anything else that can be done to sort of quantify the level of the need going on into the future, I think, is a very good thing as we plan new buses and to make sure there's a good balance between the needs of everybody.
Thank you, Dan. The last thing.
Can I just comment on that? Again, one of the things that I'm always concerned about is the invisible disability, that in fact someone who should have access to that seat feels they have to push someone out of the way to do it. So the more our regular riders are aware that people have a right to those seats, and you should not feel you own it. If someone who needs it asks for it, you should give it up.
Elver.
Yes, I think that one of the main points to capture precisely that, Mr. Downey, is to elaborate stories. The stories about people with visible and not visible disabilities, that they can just, you know, capture these and disseminate this message through media, through posters, through, you know, different ways and one-on-one into the community. And also along besides the all the items that they might the other members just share, the visibility about this area is also important on the floor. So if we have some kind of area assigned with a symbol, not only on the chair, but also the floor, when we can just, I ride a scooter, so therefore I ride the bus, and it's just really challenging. Well, but you have heard that before. Thank you.
And lastly, I think on this one point, I would say that making this part of WMATA's courtesy campaign, as it is currently being implemented, I think that this is, should be part of that campaign, so that particularly, and I appreciate you bringing up the hidden disabilities, those individuals, if they request priority seating, that they get granted that priority seating. For someone like myself, or let's say someone in a wheelchair with a service animal, it's rather apparent, but for others it is not. So I think that's important. I think the second element, and I think there are a couple of points on our agenda here that maybe talk about this, has to do with proposed fare increases, and I'll maybe invite the RAC to talk about this also. As I stated earlier, I think that the AAC committee in its discussions has generally is generally saying, indicating that they do not want to see fare increases. I know that that's been discussed pretty widely in the newspapers, in the media, and AAC certainly agrees with that. There have been other discussions with respect to changes in fares when service on the rail, for instance, is affected, and how can that service be measured as far as reductions in fares for groups or individuals. One of the proposals, and this goes under the first item on our agenda, that we've looked at, we've discussed, we don't really have hard or fast numbers, would be under the Metro Access discussion, would be to perhaps charge twice the bus fare as opposed to the bus and rail fare. We're not quite sure, anecdotally we've had some folks look at it, but we're not quite sure that the bus, that the fare calculator, as it's calculating the current fares, takes into consideration if a train or a bus is being used, a combination of bus and train or two trains or whatever, because of the slowdown and the work that's being done on the tracks. So I think it would be something that we'd like to take a look at, whether we can base the Metro Access fares on perhaps just a bus calculation as opposed to a bus rail calculation in the future. But the overall point, I think, on the fare discussion is that the AAC, along with what we've heard from everybody else, will go on record as indicating that they do not want to see a fare increase. Dan or Barbara, did you want to discuss that now or jump in? I know that what your feelings are regarding.
Well, you kind of opened the door, so I will. But as you may recall, it's one of the topics is fare simplification, actually, that the RAC had been doing some thinking and talking about, and a lot of work with Mark. Why have I forgotten Mark's last name? Schofield, right, thank you. Because we'd already heard, you know, like D.C., and I think both Maryland and D.C. had come out saying they weren't really in favor of fare increases, but we kind of came to the thought that, you know, fare simplification is probably not good for this year either, because anytime you simplify, it means somebody's going to have a fare go up and somebody's going to have a fare go down, and maybe that's just not what the public needs right now. But we have been just looking at budget issues in general, and as the chair, I'm going to let Jeremiah continue and talk about what we specifically came up with.
Yeah, I mean, it's Jeremiah with Fairfax County Writers Advisory Council. So the Writers Advisory Council did vote on a resolution where we would not be in support of a fare increase for this year. I mean, and that's, we recognize that this year would be the alternate year from Metro traditionally where a fare increase would be proposed. But considering the challenges and some of the negative publicity and some of the incidents that have affected ridership and you know, kind of harmed and further undermined the reputation of Metro, we feel from a ridership perspective, it just would not send the right message to the riders at a time where Metro, we believe, should be working to be more conciliatory towards the riders and at least throw an acknowledgement that Metro does not or recognizes some of the hardships and the challenges that riders have faced, and in recognition of that, we as a group, as Metro in general, would not vote or would not have a fare increase for the fiscal year 2017 budget. Also adding to that as well, we also would like to see the board look at asking Metro to adopt a policy, something that is written, something that's tangible on issuing an automatic fare refund. We saw something that was done where I believe it was the train derailment where where Metro gave it across the board refund to affected ridership based on entry and exit gates and as such. But what kind of surprised me was that there was not a written policy, or there's not a standard in place as far as when a refund would
occur.
Right, exactly. And you know, to be clear, we're not talking about, you know, some of the disruptions, but maybe something in the realm of, you know, where a service disruption is significant enough that it would raise the commute time by 20 to 30 minutes, for example, you know, where over average, where that would trigger an automatic, the policy would say, okay, well, that would be an event that would require, or that would force Metro or ask Metro to give an automatic fare refund to those affected riders.
Second, you know, we thought about, you know, trying to come up with some of those parameters, and we felt like, you know, we could be there for a month, all night, every night, for a month, talking and debating about, you know, what constitutes the definition. And we just came up with extreme and unforeseen, you know, because sometimes we have planned extreme headways, for instance, but we didn't even attempt to really make it very specific. It was a policy statement of whatever your policy is that you would want to make and guidance for the staff.
Thanks for clarifying.
You look at the work, the slowdown, let's say, in the rail service, is that slowdown going to be reflected in, let's say, as I started off with, the Metro Access fares, so that an individual who's riding Metro Access would get the fare calculated properly?
Mr. Coleman. I wasn't referring to the issue of fare simplification. Which we went over fairly quickly. I just wanted to probe back with the Riders Advisory Council. What I'm thinking about is that it seems like we have a very complex fare system right now, as opposed to something like New York City, which has this great $2.75 fare when you go across town in Manhattan, when you go out to the airport all the way up to the Bronx. Ours is a fairly complex system. So I'm just curious whether the Riders Advisory Council thought that simplifying the system, maybe just with a two-zone system, one fare for close-in zone and one fare further out, would have some appeal generally among riders. And what I'm getting to, what's making me think about this, is that I noticed that our maximum fare is now a very high, nationally, 5.9. And it strikes me that with the decline in gas prices over the last year, it's making those kinds of fares very unattractive. People coming from Shady Grove or Wheeling Restaurant really don't have an advantage taking the train. It's cheaper probably to drive at those rates, considering what the gasoline now costs. So I was thinking of trying to find some way maybe we can bring down those fares in the far suburbs to encourage people to get back on rail.
No, Mr. Evans has to leave, so I would ask
you want to answer his question, and I'll say something, and then I go.
Right.
Well, I have taken initiative on speaking to my counterparts with the REC on having some ideas and proposals regarding fare simplification, and we do have some ideas on the table. None that we are at present are ready to formally at least propose. But some of the ideas would be zone pricing or even fluctuating, peak off peak, where maybe even offering flat fare during off peak, for example, within a jurisdiction or within a certain number of rails. So those are all types of ideas, but this time we haven't been prepared to look at that because, as Barbara alluded to earlier, from our standpoint, any type of fare simplification, you're probably going to look at a raise in rates for one group and a reduction in others in order to make it more revenue neutral. Right. Yeah, most definitely. That definitely is the plan to have some proposals thrown out there within the next few months.
And I do apologize that I have to leave, but I do want to address this quickly. I do not support raising fares, as you know, or cutting service, and that's my position. It's the position of the District of Columbia as well, so that's what our position is. So I'm going to need your help, because here's the conundrum which we face. The money has to come from somewhere, right? It has to come from somewhere. So it could come from payroll. We're in, our union contracts are up next year, and we can say to our employees, we're not going to give you the increases you've gotten in the past. That's one way. But we are stuck with this binding arbitration. And except for last time, mm-hmm. when you did negotiate right. a contract, we usually go to binding arbitration, right. and we generally lose. So I don't know that that is a place for us to get money. Then the only other place is the jurisdictions, and the money has to come from the jurisdictions. And so I need your help in at least letting your voice be known to, if I represent the district, you don't have to let me know, Maryland and Virginia, about that you don't want fare increases, and that means the jurisdictions are going to have to pay more money to do that. I'm a firm believer in public transportation. That public transportation only works when it's affordable and convenient. It doesn't work when it's expensive like Metro and not convenient like Metro. It doesn't work. And so if we want to get to the Paris model, which I believe has the best system in the world, where you can get to a subway 100 yards, now they start building it in 1900, so they have an advantage over us, but they are still building it, which we're not doing. And so in order to make that work,
subsidizes the whole system. And so that's why it works. Here, we have to get not only the district of Virginia, here's my point. The federal government pays zero in operating. Zero, not a dime. $150 million in capital dollars, zero in operating. You need to get the federal government, and I would make the suggestion they pay the least amount of whatever the three jurisdictions are, or pay the least, I can't remember who it is. The federal government just has to pay what they the other $250 million into our system. Number one, we keep it from having to raise fares. So going to your 2 points, in 1998, I suggested, and I've done this for a long time ago, that we have a uniform fare. This is what Mike Reed talked about. In the inner jurisdiction, you pay $1 back then, and outside, $1.50, and that's it. Had we adopted that stuff with it, it just forces the jurisdiction to pay more money. But, you know, I'll leave you with this thought. We put billions of dollars into roads and cars, not hundreds of millions, billions of dollars into roads and cars. We put a fraction of that amount into public transportation with every first class system. So my only point of my speech is I can't do this alone. I need you not only to talk to people, but to protest, to march on the state capitals. You really got to do this. Because I'm getting feedback, I got to tell you, no. That's what I'm getting. Feedback is no, we're not giving the Metro another dime. One that we gave them last year. If that's the situation, this is what I'm telling you, the public, here's my conversation, who will have the system you have today. A reliable system, it's expensive, and it's convenient. If that's the system you want, that's people, then we can have these discussions, and that's what will happen. We want the system that we believe we deserve, and it costs us $25 billion in the next 10 years. And money's got to come from somewhere. Maryland industry, and they can speak for themselves. Maybe me and already as well. But please help me. Please help me. This is important. Okay, thank you. I'm sorry I have to leave, but I would like to have another one start earlier so that we can.
We do have a set of handouts that we had understood you already had, so if you haven't seen, we had all these recommendations documented, and I don't see them in front of you, so I was hoping that we could send one with you. Oh, okay. I want you to have an added.
I'd like to meet some other time.
Great. Thank you. Dan, did you want to add something?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if they're quite ready yet. Pat, I just wanted to add with respect to especially the fair refund or partial refunds. We think it's at least worthwhile to study because, you know, we don't really know how big of an impact something like that would have on Metro financially. I suspect it's rather small. And I think the benefits of, you know, just having people feel that Metro is more reactive to them could probably end up being much more positive even financially. So it's worth looking into.
We agree. And also the Accessibility Advisory Committee a few years ago looked at a zoned system. So there were proposals that were put forward. They weren't adopted. But fair simplification as far as Metro access is concerned would be extremely helpful. I know that when we looked at putting together the fare calculator for Metro access, when we were given a report on a combination of bus and rail fares, I think it was 244,000 different combinations. That makes for a very complicated system for people trying to understand what they're paying, and you double that for Metro access. So I think that a way going forward is going to be that the joint proposals by Riders Advisory Council and AAC would be very effective. We don't want to see a zone system that is going to impact the disabled unfairly, but I think that there's medium ground there, and that's why AAC sits on RAC, and that's why I think a joint product together would be very useful from both groups. I'll finish a couple more.
I agree. Yes.
Ms. Hoggins wants to say something. Sorry.
Mr. Barnes, who says a dollar is good enough for a fare. I do agree with him, but I'd love to know where everybody else is going to get. You want to march on the hill about something? March on the hill with full funding Metro. That's a real challenge, but it's a real, real, realistic thing that we should be doing if we want to be comparable. And I think if you do some research and look around the other agencies, you will find the issues that we're discussing are very much appropriate in others, but they are all funded differently. And so this it sounds very simple, but it's not quite as simple. And I thought the policy piece to be addressed, and then we can vote.
And I think in addition, I think policy would be very good to have.
Yeah.
The other would be to have a better understanding of technology.
That's exactly
and
right.
And we know that every time I come up with an idea, I just hear it can't be done. Or it can't be done until we get the new fare system. And you say, when are we getting that?
We had a couple meetings, I forget the gentleman's last name, the guy from Minnesota that you guys hired to come in to do the new fare system. We spoke with him a few different times. First of all, he's very collaborative and just a nice guy. Everything that we asked him in terms of what could be done technologically, his answer was basically, it can be done, and it's just a fare policy issue.
Just to be
Yeah, just to be clear, I mean, I think it was demonstrated that it's possible, I mean, with the recent derailment, that an automatic, you know, all we're saying is, like, you know, like you were saying, Catherine, is adopt a policy that actually, that says this is when such a refund would occur. It's incremental steps from our standpoint, just, you know, something that at least is conciliatory towards the riders and acknowledgement of the challenges. And it keeps the riders a lot of times, you know, myself, for example, where, you know, we're having to kind of call in and kind of grovel for a refund. And it's very discretionary, arbitrary process, whereas at least if there is a standard in place that Metro adheres to, that is something that riders will view as favorable and as something that would go a long way in helping reestablish and rebuild that relationship between the rider and Metro.
One of the ideas that was floated in my direction was that we know when the track work is going to be done. We know when they're going to be reducing the amount of trains going forward. And maybe we can tie the some type of revenue rebate back to the riders based on the fact that you might be only taking, there might be only two trains an hour or something like that. So I think that the schedule for track maintenance is well known, and that might help us to devise such a policy.
We, when we put this together, I think Jeremiah had picked some words, extreme. We picked extreme and unforeseen. So, I mean, I think we can, it's a demonstration of that, a point of how we could talk about this forever. We were thinking if it's a planned one and they know it and it's advance warning, we have great alerts going out the week before a weekend slowdown. People can plan around that, but the surprises are the things that they get most disgruntled about, and they may, and we think that there are some people that at the hint of delays, they might not go in at all because they know right now that if they go in and come right back out when they see what the platform looks like, they won't even give it a chance. And it could really help recover some of the lost revenue. And we aren't necessarily saying a full refund. I mean, we're just laying on the table. We'd love to have a policy established. Yeah, I mean, maybe they get just some part of it so that it's back down to what non-peak is or something.
I think it's...
That's an interesting proposal.
Don't give me any ideas.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I think it's important as a gesture. I mean, and I think this is the time when Metro needs to make a gesture to its riders to retain them and to build their trust. It may be a short-term solution, because many of the other problems Metro are facing are longer term. Something that shows that Metro cares about its riders and acknowledges in a monetary way that whatever the parameters were, Metro failed on meeting those parameters, and there ought to be a rebate or a refund of that trip. And I urge you to, just to, you know, tell staff, find, you know, I mean, it shouldn't be that challenging to find out if you have the technological capacity to do that, and set out some objectives. You know, how much is good? What would they estimate? If you reward people for a 15-minute delay, a 30-minute delay, a 45-minute delay, figure out get the dollar estimates if you can, and try to move ahead and make a decision. I think it would play well.
Good. Ask them if there's a good reason not to do it.
Agreed on the AAC side too. And I think that coming together with some joint recommendations from both groups, I think are going to be very effective. I know that our groups have talked about the same things with respect to trains running per hour, and I think that could probably be put into a policy that riders would be able to know and understand.
And I think Jeremiah and the RAC are very willing to participate and be at the table for those discussions. We just know that, the first step is there, what is a policy that you would want to support before we get into exactly how would we execute that policy?
Okay, good. Yeah, just quickly on one or two other subjects. Metro access accessibility, moving forward, one of the pilots that we've looked at that I think has been very effective, as I said earlier, was the use of taxi cabs like we're doing with DC Transit same day service. We think that's encouraging that's a big success within the district. We hear that month after month. Encouraging the same pilot programs within Maryland and Virginia, I think creates a win-win situation for both the metro access system and the individuals who are using would be using that system. I know that we started off with I think it was dialysis patients, and it has expanded, and we have not seen I think the full use of that type of service. So that would be one thing we would encourage. The other thing that I think is important, one last thing on our list was, I learned yesterday that we have individuals who from Columbia Lighthouse who are going to be looking at how the accessibility of WMATA documents are placed on the web, making sure that those documents are particularly readable, particularly for visually impaired individuals. And I have worked with them before as far as making documents accessible. It's a very good group. That's a very excellent step to make sure that products that are going out from WMATA, like like your documents on the web and also surveys that are going out to other groups, that people with disabilities can access those. So that's a real plus, and I think that's great. That's kind of our agenda. Oh, my last thing would be the emergency exercises. One of the things that we've heard over the last 2 or 3 months has been that we've got not only people from AAC and the RAC who want to participate within these exercises, but we have a whole huge community of disabled people out there that would, from the general public, that would like to be part of these exercises. It would provide two things. One, it would allow individuals with disabilities the ability to get educated as to what the expectations of those folks will be. But two, it would allow the emergency personnel to get more of a broad brush of people with disabilities, and particularly those individuals who use service animals from the hearing impaired deaf community, deaf blind community. You know, we don't have that many people on AAC that can, you know, with the service animals and in that capacity, but we've got Gallaudet and we've got that whole community out there that's just begging to be part of these emergency exercises. So something to think about, I think. That also creates a win-win situation for disability community and for the individuals who are getting the training from the WMATA side.
This is Denise Rush. Also, the time that they start, I've done two tests, but 6:30 and 6 in the morning on your weekend is a little early, and it discourages some people to participate. Maybe if we could move it up to 7 or 7:30, that would help get more people to participate.
Is it the RAC turn?
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. So for the rest of the RAC agenda? Okay. Yep. All right. So Dan?
He's got the Metro mobile applications topic, which is also, there's also
I'm making quite a mess here. First of all, thanks for listening to us so much. I really appreciate the time. We As one of the subcommittees with the RAC, we looked into the issue of mobile apps, and you have a copy of the resolution that we passed to you guys. Not to take up too much of your time, we feel that this is an area in which right currently Metro gives the makes the data available for third-party developers, and they provide their apps. A lot of times these apps have various quirks with them, and sometimes the information isn't very accurate. And we believe that people look at Metro as responsible and makes Metro look bad. So what we would recommend, and nothing specific, to ask Metro to look into more directly participating in the provision of mobile apps. Not that Metro needs to have its own app. Maybe they can think about endorsing or partnering, certification, something to ensure better quality with the applications. We look at this as something where Metro can improve its customer service, and the reality of it is the virtual face of Metro for a lot of people, and they interact with these applications. So on top of everything else, it's an opportunity for Metro to make a better impression with riders, and maybe some other things could come out of it as well. Thank you. I mean, it could also be looked upon in great bigger thinking in the future. This is a way that Metro communicates with its riders. You know, we put signs up where people are standing in the stations, and we know we have them captive. You also have them captive when they're looking at this app information, which most people do. I believe we have done some investigation. I was not the person to do it, but my experience with one or two of them is that there are some times in which they're down, and there are some times in which the information isn't correct. And, you know, it's looked upon as part of the same system. I don't think people differentiate and say, oh, this app developer is screwed up. They just look at it, oh, it's another bad experience with Metro.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's not something as, like, as straightforward as an endorsement, I would think, you know, if it's, you know, the data, using the data comes with a caveat that it's responsibly used and it's reliable and it's beneficial to the riders.
So we have your support on that, I gather. So we have one more from Bob.
Well, I think one of the goals of RAC is to make Metro more responsive to its riders and more visible, more available. And our view, we took a look at the station manager, because that person is frequently the Metro's face with the riders. And we came up with four recommendations. First, while the policy is that during peak hours that the station manager be outside of his kiosk and available within a perimeter, we would like to see that policy reinforced. There are certainly some examples that we've all experienced of not finding a station manager around at rush hour. And that's something that needs to be mentioned again and again until that's something that is just going to happen all the time. Available and receptive and open to the public at rush hour, not chatting with other Metro employees out there and available. In connection with that, some of us have, I personally suggest the kiosk to me is often it's not an open, welcoming kind of structure. But that being said, it's there. One of the things that might be suggested is to remove or modify the tint on the kiosk. Frankly, I go to stations, our other members go to stations, and it's not obvious whether there's somebody actually in the kiosk or not. And I think that would be a fairly, if it's practical, easy thing to do. But that station manager needs to be out there and available. Identification, I know you've adopted a policy to put uniforms, distinct uniforms on the station. Okay, well, I haven't.
Yeah, I was going to take a picture for you.
Oh, yeah, well, I guess we haven't seen it. I haven't seen them yet. We just want to reinforce that and urge you to sort of urge Romana to get that up and going and implement it in 100% of the stations. The third issue is incident staffing. When there is an incident at a station, it is on the shoulders of the station manager to manage that incident. If he or she needs additional staff, they can request it. But we have been told that that staff has to travel to the station by Metro. It seems almost counterintuitive. If there is a train that's broken down in the station, and you need to call in the reinforcements, how are the reinforcements going to get into the station? We're suggesting that perhaps the policy be reexamined and allow extra staff when needed to be transported to the station by other means. Car, taxi, bus, police vehicle, whatever, to get the station manager some real help as quickly as they can. And finally, incident communications. The most frequent comment we hear from riders regarding incidents is they aren't receiving information as quickly as possible. And generally, the impression we get is that almost all communications must come from the operations center, not from the individual station manager. We think that perhaps that has a policy that ought to be reexamined to give the station manager a little more latitude in communicating directly with the people in the station when the incident is going on as to what is happening, or at a minimum to reassure the riders that.
Could I jump in for a second also, just to add to what you're saying, is when you're looking at incident communication, because we've seen this particularly in the deaf community, is to make sure that when we're doing an incident communication, any communication, that you have alternative formats so that you're able to communicate with folks who are visually impaired, hearing impaired, mobility impaired, that sort of thing. So we want to be able to keep a communication plan in effect that's going to hit a lot of your, going to hit all your riders.
Yeah. Again, it's sort of, it's service, it's responsiveness, it's showing the riders that they're cared about, keeping them up to date with what's going on, even if the problem can't be resolved in the short term. So those are four of our suggestions, and I hope that they get some serious consideration, and we'll probably be back with some. We have some active minds on the customer service committee. We'll
I'm one of them. And one of the things that I've always been taught in communication is that, you know, even if you don't know something, you state what you know and what you don't know. Because, like, if you don't know yet how long it's going to be till some problem is fixed, you can at least say, you know, we got people looking at it. We don't know yet, but as soon as we know how long it's going to be, we'll let you know. Or whatever it is you do know and you don't know. Because it means that they just didn't fail to get the word. Is it that there is no word of that nature to get yet?
No,
Right. Right. And we do have these documented for you but we also, once we have seen that you are also in favor of it, we will share these with the relevant staff people through our contacts that we will share them with people because, I mean, the station management people worked with us very closely. They spent lots of time with us. They were wonderful, and we want to give them this information directly too, so we can, at least the people we know that are involved in it. We'll happily do that, but we would love it if you can reinforce it as well.
What I'd like to see is how we take this and have some kind of conversation or discussion and elevate it to the board level as a good option. I don't know if that's something we would do.
I think it should get the benefit of staffers reacting to it. But there's nothing I've seen on any of these three that I would say is not a topic that deserves close attention.
Thank you.
It may be different aspects of it.
Well, speaking of your tattered relationship, I have one thing that didn't come on the agenda because it only occurred to me after I attended the Writers Union meeting Monday night. And there's no, I don't suppose you'd be shocked to know that the people that have formed the Writers Union are not, don't have the benevolent opinion of the board and the staff, as I know I do, and I think many members of the RAC do. I mean, there are some of you that I've worked with enough over time. I know how much you care about the writers and how much you care about being responsible. And so many people on the staff, it's the same thing. But they don't believe that. They don't see that. And so some of the ideas I heard I was going to pass on to you is that, like, for instance, they still believe that none of you ride the Metro. And I know.
You're riding the Metro.
Yeah. So one small idea for consideration is if the bios that you have mentioned, you know, you're an avid, you come in from Reston or wherever, you know, and you, I know that, I think you, they're the buses that you ride or something. That's one of the things when we have meetings, we always talk first about, well, I'm from Alexandria and I write Blue Line. And so if you had that in yours, that would be great. They know then you're not just looking at only as a board member, you're looking at it as a writer.
And you still have the notion of private jets and helicopters that shuttle you between.
Right. And well, and I'm going to accept the invitation to join you. I'm going to go to the King Street. I'm going to go to King Street. And I'm going to extend that to all the RAC by email, yeah. But that's one little thing. And so thank you for that.
I think it's really hard to
Yeah, you don't have to say, yeah, your address and phone, but I'm a Silver Line. I ride the Silver Line regularly, you know, or whatever it is. Yeah.
This is Denise Rush. Does anybody ride Metro Access? Well, you know, well, until you walk in those shoes, it's hard to make some decisions until you experience it, because I ride it a lot and I don't use the Metro and the bus that often. So that's why I do the volunteer with the disaster chance to experience it. And sometimes I just ride the metro bus and rail just to see the other side. And sometimes it's not pretty.
I just wanted to say thank you so much for listening to us and for taking these up with WMATA recommendations, because we as a RAC as well, I think we suffer a little bit of a loss of credibility in front of riders. You know, you guys created us, and we'd like to function as a way of getting riders to productively participate. And the more that we can show that we've made a difference, and what we make a difference by telling you guys something or informing you and then it being acted on. So we really appreciate that.
AAC also agrees. I mean, the support that you've given us, particularly on a lot of the projects that we're working with, lighting, bus stops, naming for two of them, and just the support that we get from WMATA staff through Christian Kent and ADAP. That's what makes our AAC successful. I think the collaboration with the RAC has been great. I see us a lot of synergy between the two groups. And so I also want to say thank you for your support and for letting us utilize the resources within WMATA to try to get our job done so that we can supply you with good information.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
No, that and debated
about can we get to
100? Right, 255 in the fiscal year. Yeah. Good.
May I ask Mr. Sheehan a question from AAC? Issue. It's not on your list, but there has been this controversy over the last couple of weeks about the use of the handicapped access gates and the gentleman with the service animal.
Oh, yes, I did read about that.
Could you perhaps talk if that's an issue that came before your committee, or if this gentleman, if it's an issue you've heard about prior to his
actually,
you know,
in my
light,
yeah,
and whether you're satisfied with how it's been resolved.
I am satisfied with how it was resolved. I understand what the issue is and what led up to it. Understand the circumstances around it. I think that the resolution, as far as the technical resolution, being able to get through the gate with his service animal, I don't believe it was a guide dog, but a service animal, by extending the amount of time that he could utilize to get through the gate was just perfect. I think in a situation like that, which is a little bit different with the wheelchair and the service animal, you're really looking at a more extreme situation than you might, let's say, with an individual who is visually impaired using a guide dog. So I think that the action that was taken was good. I think that what led up to it, the communication might have been a little bit better. Understand what the standard operating procedures were all about. But I think that being able to look at the situation, understand that we might be able to do a better job by working it this way, extending how the gates open and how they close, very simple. And once that is applied uniformly throughout the system, then we're good to go. And that helps. Right. And I think that, you know, when you're looking at your customer and you're saying customer courtesy and taking your customer's needs seriously and then coming with the accommodation, I think that's exactly what's expected. In working with Department of Veterans Affairs, we don't have all the answers all the time for all the veterans, but being able to listen to what the veterans' needs are and what they need to do and how we need to accommodate them with a reasonable accommodation is how you want to move forward. The same lesson is applied to WMATA as elsewhere. So I would say the incident was unfortunate, but the result was good after the fact. And then I would just encourage, as I'm sure we all do, the employees to listen to the individuals, not be so rigid in their thinking, and see what we can do, see how we can do better. Not that we're not doing good already, but is there a way we can improve? And I think that's what was done, so I'm happy.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for staying a longer day than you expected.